Hi, welcome to today's episode of Sweetland Center for Writing's podcast, Topics in Writing. I'm T. Hetzel, and today I am speaking with Charles Bazerman of the University of California, Santa Barbara, about meaningful writing in students' social lives. Charles Bazerman, Professor of Education at the University of California, Santa Barbara, is interested in the social dynamics of writing, rhetorical theory, the rhetoric of knowledge production and use, and the lifespan development of writing abilities. He is steering committee chair of the International Society for the Advancement of Writing Research and recent chair of the Conference of College Composition and Communication. His books include A Rhetoric of Literate Action, A Theory of Literate Action, The Languages of Edison's Light, Constructing Experience, Shaping Written Knowledge, The Informed Writer, The Handbook of Research on Writing, Traditions of Writing Research, Genre in a Changing World, and What Writing Does and How It Does It. He has published over 100 chapters and articles. His works have been translated into Portuguese, Spanish, French, Italian, Danish, and Chinese, and he has worked with campuses throughout Europe, Latin America, and Asia. Charles, welcome today to Topics in Writing.
Hi.
Thanks so much for joining me via technology. Where are you speaking to us from today?
In my basement in Santa Barbara, California. Oh.
Well, Chuck, it's good to hear your voice, and I hope things are going well as they can be out there in California. Today, let's start by talking about what drew you to the scholarly work that you do.
Well, I found my calling in the teaching of literacy when I was teaching first grade and third grade back in the 60s in inner city Brooklyn. Up until then, I had been at a kind of loss as to where I want to go and what would be meaningful work in my life. But as I, when I wound up teaching writing, teaching literacy at the elementary grades, I saw that literacy was really important for how people developed and what the course of their lives would be. A few years later, I was teaching writing after I completed my degree. I was teaching writing at City University of New York. And at that time, I initially thought, well, I understood writing. I was very successful in school throughout my years. And I just needed to share what I had gotten through my privileged education to help other people have those resources. But over time, I learned... one is that I didn't understand everything about writing, and I didn't understand everything about my students, nor how they developed, or how we could create good classroom conditions or general conditions for the improvement of writing. So that led me to research. That I needed to find out a lot of things. It started out by with the realization that the reason students were in my courses at the university were so that they could succeed at the university. That was the sort of institutional motive that got me paid and got students into my classes and,
yes,
set up the whole wonderful opportunity. So from that, I said, oh, well, what are they writing at the university? At that point, there wasn't a lot of attention to that because writing was viewed from a whole variety of ways, and writing does a lot of wonderful things. But the people who were teaching writing weren't necessarily attuned to the total life of students at the university. They were interested in one aspect or another of writing, and they also tend to see writing as forms of individual expression or individual thought. Again, this was, very early 70s. I hadn't even heard, writing across the curriculum was just starting, and it was starting in places that I hadn't heard about yet. So I started to do some surveys of faculty at my university, what they were requiring of students in their classes. So that was my first step into to think about really what were the purposes of writing and writing instruction. And that got me into writing across the curriculum, writing in the disciplines. One of the earlier realizations was that students at the university wrote about their reading, which started down a path of thinking about intertextuality. But then also that writing was organized within disciplines. Student writing was a little bit different than what professionals did. That was also a recognition. But there was some kind of loose relationship which needed exploring. And so I started to, again, look more fully into what was happening both in the disciplines and in the educational versions of the disciplines. The coursework. And after that, one thing led to another and another and another and another. And that's a very long story. But it was, let's say, it was that literacy, learning, literacy and literacy success for education was situated within classroom activities. And then student development, cognitive development, emotional development, social development was fostered by those activities.
Could we talk, Chuck, about those activities that are situated in the classroom? For example, when we're considering the upper level writing classroom, what are some of those activities that will concretely lead to success and that students could transfer into the university for success in their classes? And I mean, from the title of what we're talking about today, their lives, success beyond the walls of the classroom moment and the university moment.
Well, I think I can't give a single simple answer to that. I think that it starts out by asking, well, who are the students? Where are they situated with respect to these upper division courses? What is the nature of their major, both as seen by the faculty and as seen by the students? There is a kind of misguided assumption embedded in a lot of majors, and which is carried over, I think, into some of the writing across the curriculum prescriptions.
What would that misguided assumption be, Chuck?
So that's that all students in the majors, or the purpose of the major, is to prepare students for graduate school in that discipline, in the related discipline.
Yes, okay.
And further, that students need to be prepared and guided by the genres and practices of full-scale professionals, and modeled, the work needs to be modeled on that as rapidly as possible. So even if the work were even if the majors and the students were all directed, 100% of the majors were going to graduate school, and the graduate students will all become publishing scholars in those fields, which is of bizarre assumptions. Right. But even if that, were the case, it wouldn't necessarily be that the optimum writing at the junior, senior level would be imitation of research articles for which students are not yet prepared, haven't done that full research, are not situated in relationship to peers, professional peers, but are rather in a hierarchical classroom, learning some basic skills. It's just not obvious that they ought to be trying to write the same thing as they might be writing 10 years from now.
Right. And it's, and to expect that of them sets them up for not being able to also do that, and not in a very genuine way, which would be disconcerting, which would present a false idea of what the experience would be like eventually. But I can kind of see why this assumption is in place, because it's rooted in folks that with the best intentions are also scholarly folks, and this is the path they've taken and their lens for it. But how do we, so how do we
right,
change
I,
it?
I just
how,
want,
oh, sorry. Go ahead, well, Chuck. Well, yeah, go ahead.
I take things very slowly. So first I want to point out that you pointed out exactly the two difficulties. One is that they're not well prepared to do it, and they're not well positioned to do it, all right, to do that. And secondly, it can lead to a kind of shallow, false performance, yes, and incorrect ideas about the nature of that writing. And as you say, it is a natural enough assumption for people to make, because I've seen at least that, I guess this is a misperception that is more dominant at the more elite universities, but the idea is that even if not everybody is going to graduate school, the purpose of the major is to identify and select them. Mm-hmm. Talking to people about their courses in different disciplines, I found only a few programs that say, oh, of course all our students aren't going, all our majors are not going to become professionals in our field, let alone professional scholars, you know, that they might be in related professions. But only a few have recognize that their students might go on to all kinds of different careers, and knowledge of their fields not only might serve them differently in their later life, but even students are already anticipating that they're not going to become scholars, or even in an immediately related field, they're just interested in something, or they're good at it, and there are a whole variety of reasons. They say it might be useful, but in an ancillary way.
Right, right.
Community colleges, actually, there's much less of that assumption.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Right, and there's more of recognition that students might follow a variety of paths, and they try to design the curriculum, which also means designing the writing tasks in ways that are more appropriate to the student lives. So
that sounds to me like a revelation, like something that the other universities need to redirect some of their energy toward, because growing all of the writers, all of the students in your classroom, not just those couple that might shake out to become part of academia in a clear, you know, way. Chuck, what are some of the things that you're finding that students do need in the writing classroom as undergraduates that can grow their writing so that it is meaningful and valuable to them, not only for the things that are being asked of them here in the university moment in different classrooms, but for their own development, for their lives as thinkers.
Okay. I'll follow your question, and I won't go down the paths of elaborating the difficulty of getting changing
the university
mindset, changing the university, right. Yeah. Or of elements that go into it. But let me just say that as students, this will get me where I want to go. Students, even those who are heading towards a major at a certain age are heading toward professional careers, are still differently positioned in their lives. So back in the early days of writing Across the Curriculum, Cheryl Geisler did, this was her graduate study, her dissertation, did some really, which became a book, did some very interesting work with philosophy students and professional philosophers, where they would each read and write about certain texts in ethical moral philosophy. Mm-hmm. And the professors would say, oh, okay, so this writer's ideas come from this tradition and answer logically those concerns of those other writers. In other words, they position it within the literature and critique it, which is the work of the philosophers, right?
Yes.
To evaluate the truth of various claims. And then they would set it as alongside other proposals about ethical moral philosophies. So the students would approach it and said, my Uncle Joe was very, very ill. And we've been trying to figure out what is the right thing to do with Uncle Joe. And this idea from this philosopher is really useful in helping to think about how we're going to deal with Uncle Joe.
Oh, so bringing in the concrete personal experience.
Well, for those students, that was their stakes in the writing. And so that was where I was going to, is that to talk to the students and find out what their stakes are and what's interesting to them about it. What's the angle that, why is that stuff interesting? And how is their thinking developing to allow that to, so that their ideas can elaborate and they'll say interesting things. Otherwise, their writing doesn't communicate a lot. It at best, it communicates that they're doing the right thing according to the standards of the professor.
Right.
But they're not. The whole point of writing is being able to say something, even if it's saying something within a very specialized language, specialized interest of a profession. So the first and most important thing is you've got to, the students have to recognize what makes something that they are interested in, which will make it of interest to other people, because it's a unique message that's of some importance.
And so it seems vital to communicate to the students, to your students, that and to give them also in some ways within the context of the class goals and themes, or to give them the space to find their own connection to it.
Right. It's your second word term that's more important than the first one. Because to communicate, I can tell them and tell them and tell them, oh, yeah, you got to find what's important to you. But it's creating the space, which is allowing them to talk and hearing what they're saying, and then reflecting it back to them, maybe with my additional knowledge of genres and how fields work and how they could realize their goals and what are the options, right? And what one needs to do to fulfill that impulse, right? That's what I can offer them. But to do that, I have to give them the space and listen to them. So I tend to invest a lot of time and energy in the earliest stages of writing tasks.
Oh, okay.
And it's much more valuable to invest time there because students are trying to locate those their ideas, but also when they locate something that works, the ideas and structures flow. They make sense to them and they come up with much more sophisticated language. They want to write both conceptually more deeply and in greater detail and writing with greater clarity. And so they start working on those problems themselves. It's not a matter of correction. Now, of course, as things take shape, you can help them shape it and even provide criteria at the end, you know, that as you near the end, you're looking at more things that stand in the way of the readers getting what they're trying to say. So that's more like traditional traditional revision and editing.
Right? Yes.
But that kind of flows from the much deeper communicative impulse which you've helped elicit and then give direction to.
And so is there or are there some like a sequence or a scaffolding of these like prompts or assignments to get students thinking about so they have a chance to think more, maybe not the first idea, maybe, you know, like what you're saying is spend more time early on. Do you then build that in to your classroom, scaffolding of work early on, Chuck?
Well, again, depending on the class and what I see as the student body and where they're headed in their careers and what I've known from similar students in the past, I will certainly try to structure the assignments to build across the term. But there's no one way to do it. It's a kind of a general impulse that goes into design, but the design is local for that course and that student body. You're reminding me of that in there's a group of educational scholars in Switzerland who have the term they use is it educational sequence, who have come up with several models. That's much more popular in Latin America and in Europe, the ideas of Snoily, Dolz. These are the people who work with instructional sequences of that sort. I don't have general models of that sort again, but it almost always starts, let's say, when I give an assignment, whether it's a brief, a weekly homework, or it's a big paper, I start off with a discussion, like, so what are you thinking about this? And it could be a free write, it could be a classroom discussion, it could be individual conferences, but a discussion that starts with, which really is sort of open-ended because the student's impulses aren't necessarily well-channeled. And if you try to channel them too rapidly, you're going to tamp down what might be there. Or they might be self-censoring because they think you're looking for a certain
right.
thing. And they might not realize the full set of options open to them.
Well, I love that, Chuck. I love that in the last few sentences, you've said the word open and openness. It's really inspiring to think about the writing classroom. And it seems like it's, since we're asking the students to be risk-taking in what the ways they're willing to develop and grow as writers, it's on us as instructors to have this openness, which can sometimes be risk-taking in the classroom as well.
Okay, but I'm going to now go to the opposite side and say, so if students are moving towards disciplines, or work in a certain field, work that will be not just acceptable and credible in the field, but work that would actually provide something substantial, there are standards that develop in the field, no matter how flexible you are in seeing how that works. So there's a study I have, which I did a couple of years ago. I looked at students in a senior seminar in political science. Now, this major was one of the few that I'd run across where they were actually aware that their students weren't going to become political scientists or necessarily even follow a political career in any way. But and they had hundreds and hundreds of majors. They only had a senior research project for their honors class of maybe a dozen students out of the hundreds and hundreds. Now, they didn't have a lot of methodological work because the major was so open to the variety of interests that students might have. They didn't have a lot of methodological training. So I did a study of the seniors taking that year-long seminar and their development of their project. It turned out that those that had, for personal reasons, to their own trajectories, a lot of methodological training or experiences, self-teaching, they wrote much better senior projects. Mm-hmm. And it's not because they were just limited to one method. In fact, the ones who had the widest experience were most flexible and multidimensional in their work. Those who had learned one method used that method. and those who had no methodological training were really at a loss. And so they couldn't incorporate data. They didn't know how to go about collecting it, how to be intentional in their collection, what to do with it, what is even they wanted, what kind of data they wanted. Whereas those who were very sophisticated methodologically could go out and say, oh, this is the problem I have. That requires this kind of knowledge about the world and that kind of knowledge. And they'd talk about this, and I can use the evidence of the of these interviews to help me do this documentary research. And from the documentary research, I could go to institutional structures and then I could evaluate the quality of these interviewees because they had very complex understanding and did great projects. So,
and working within what the genre conventions were for these particular, what were these projects, the disciplines they were in?
Right, right. Yeah. And now they were all they were doing versions of political science, but they, this political science went everything from political philosophy to descriptive international work to survey work, voting studies. So it was a fairly broad world, but they had to understand the methods for the world they were entering into. So how do they challenge their underlying interest in the environment or in minority communities or in tax policy? How do they channel those interests into good research questions and good research methods that will actually tell them something,
right,
which they can tell other people in their theses?
Yes.
Right? Which ultimately, if they continue doing that work and evolve later in graduate studies and they become professors, could become part of the motives that's then driving their publishable work.
Chuck, thank you so much for speaking with me today, for taking the time. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. We barely got to your first question.
but it's been great. We'll have to talk again. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Sweetland podcast series, Topics in Writing, recorded at the University of Michigan. For more information about the Sweetland Center for Writing, visit us on the web at lsa.umich.edu/sweetland.